It's time for the Ron and Brian podcast. Get ready to fill your ears with the latest news, politics, current events, and whatever else we feel like talking about this week. And now, your hosts, Ron and Brian.
And good evening, everybody. It is Sunday night. It's 8 o'clock, and it is time for episode 298 of the Ron and Brian podcast. Back after a short hiatus. Brian, so damn good to see you. You were gone for a couple of weeks. You are back. Yeah. Tell me how you're doing this evening.
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm going to be honest with you. These past two Sundays, I missed partaking in this podcast. 2 weeks of Sundays where I spent doing other things. And you pointed out, you called me out. Reached out to me. Everybody, fans of the show know I was on a trip overseas. I went to Hong Kong and into mainland China. It was a trip with my lady and her family. It was I was having a really good time. You reached out to me and you said, listen, get on FaceTime, get into Wi-Fi. We need to talk. And, sometimes you veer off course. You fail to see priorities. You look at things from perspectives that just, are not really the priorities of your life. And one of the things you have in, the role you play is that you always bring me back to center. You have a consistently this ability to drive me back to the 50-yard line, to show me where the middle lane is. And when you said to me, listen, I understand, you love your lady. I understand you want to support her and, do these things, but you've got to come back. You've got to be.
You've got to focus.
Yeah, and I needed to hear that. I was forgetting what was important. Yeah, and I appreciated that, which is why here on Sunday we're doing this show on Sunday, April 7th. I'm where I should be, which is on the right hand side of this TV screen. That you're watching right now. If you're listening to the audio version, missing out on something. Ron,
yes.
I'm noticing a different background. You are not in your home office unless in the past 2 weeks you did a major renovation project I'm unaware of.
I did not. As we will discuss, later on in the show, there was a seismic event that took place in the Northeast this past week. I'm still waiting for structural engineers to come in and test the stability of the Ron and Brian home office. Until that time, I have sequestered myself in a secure location underground to avoid any aftershocks or anything that might try to do me harm. So we'll broadcast here tonight. Hopefully next week I will be back at Ron and Brian Central, but I'm just glad to have you back, and I'm just glad
Thank you.
To be doing the show here with you once again.
It is great to be back.
Should we get things going then?
Why the heck not?
All right, it's time
drink
for
of the week.
Na zdrowie.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Who's
drink of the week? Drink of the week. Drink of the week. Drink of the week.
Brian, what are you drinking tonight?
This week, I know everybody was sitting there expecting me to show up with a Chinese beer, Hong Kong beer, some beer that I snuck through customs. Well, you are wrong. Oh, this week we are going to upstate New York. We are going to Cooperstown, New York, my personal favorite brewery in America, other than Broken Goblet. Broken Goblet and Ben Salem, PA. That's my favorite. Number two, there are the great people. Let's see if you can capture this over at Amagang. I'm drinking their Hennepin, which is a Saison. How do you pronounce
Saison.
It? Saison. Saison. I am drinking. Look at the haziness of this bitch.
Very hazy.
Ron, this is the Amagang Hennepin. It's inspired by the traditional rustic brews of Belgium. Their iconic American farmhouse Saison is charmingly complex, but eminently drinkable. Artfully spiced with coriander, ginger, orange peel, and grains of paradise, its champagne-like effervescence leads to a crisp, dry finish, delighting discerning drinkers everywhere. While delicious on its own, Hennepin pairs remarkably well with a podcast. That's why I'm drinking it. Coming in at a 7.7 ABV, 24 IBU. More important, Beer Advocate score 92. Outstanding. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Amagang's Hennepin.
Take a sip. I do like the Hennepin. It's got a bit of a kick to it, but it is a great beer. Oh. You're like taking it back.
Like it's a higher level beer. You're drinking a beer, but it's a different level experience.
Second sip. Mm. Very nice.
I've got a second one in the beer fridge. This is not that's not going to last until after dark. I will be going through two this episode.
All right. I like it.
So highly recommend Amagang Hennepin. Ron, I understand you are in an underground bunker. I do not know if the Secret Service were able to give you enough time to access your beer fridge while they rushed you off to this undisclosed location. So if you could let us know, what are you drinking?
So I actually have, if you've ever been to like a drive-through at a bank, the tube system they have for deposits and things.
Yeah.
I have one of those in this bunker. It's specifically for beer cans and bottles to be sent down to me. So the Secret Service sent me from Big Timber Brewing in Elkins, West Virginia. This is their Country Roads Trust Lager. It is a light lager brewed in West Virginia with Mountain State water and American hops. It's so patriot. If beer cans wore a hat, it'd have a little red MAGA cap on it. But it is also 15% of sales will go to Country Roads Trust. Don't know what that is. Hopefully not paying legal fees of a certain former president, but trying to find the alcohol. Only 4%. It's a lighter lager. I don't have any glasses here in the bunker. They try and keep glassware, belts, shoelaces, things of that nature out of here in case, things happen, accidents happen. I don't want a Vince Foster type situation in this bunker, but enough talking. Let me have a sip of this lager.
As the man takes wasn't a big pull from that can.
Ooh. It's a good drink.
Hold on. Does it taste like MAGA? Does it taste like MAGA?
It doesn't. It's very Yingling like. I would put it probably in that category where it's not too heavy, not too much of a bite. Like it's a crushable beer. Like this is definitely one you could sit on your front porch of your double wide on a hot summer day and look down your nose at minorities and immigrants while crushing these beers. So.
And also looking uncomfortably familiar with the 15-year-old girls that also live in your trailer park.
Yes, you are correct.
Yes. Sir.
All right. I may have to have them send another one of these down the tube. So I may have to go knock on the pipes three times as a signal. We'll see.
Sure, sure.
In the meantime, you know what's next, Brian. It's Beef of the Week.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
Brian, what's bothering me this week?
16-hour flights.
Oof.
That's what's bothering me. It is a concept that had never actually seen. It didn't seem real to me. It was something that, people had spoken about, people had written about, they had blogged about it, vlogged about it, they had tweeted about it, they had Facebook messengered about it, they had.
But this time's gotta stop.
Anyway, continue, please.
Ron, I'm going to just say this to you. The horror that is the reality, the moment when you look at your clock and you realize that you have been on this plane for 7 hours. Keep in mind, that is the length of most people's work schedule, 7-8 hours. Imagine right. that you have been on a plane for 7-8 hours and you are just reaching the halfway point of your flight. Now, the lady and I flew directly from JFK to Hong Kong. That is a 16-hour flight. We chose not to do a stopover. It just didn't make sense from a time perspective. It's horrible. I will say this. The only thing that salvaged it was that we did the bulkhead row where there was no row in front of us, but there was a gap in space. And then there was the seat where the stewardesses and stewards sat during takeoff and landing. So from my seat, I literally could extend my legs as far as I could. Had the ability to stand up, walk around, did not have to worry about somebody in front of me lowering their seat. We spoke about this multiple times that, you know, to me, that is just a violation of humanity. But a 16-hour flight is genuinely...
It's excessive.
It is, you feel like you have entered purgatory that will last forever, but we were on Cathay Pacific, not Cathay Specific, which, you know, was, you know, the way I pronounced it the first couple of times. And the staff, they do take very good care of you. Food was way better than on an American airline. But at the end of the day, a 16-hour flight, you do want to start killing yourself. I don't know how people in regular economy sat.
Multiple people pointing out that they are flight attendants, Brian, and not stewardesses.
Okay.
Just blame it on the beer, Brian.
No, I'm not blaming it on the beer. I'm blaming it on the fact that I started flying in the 70s, people. Okay, in the 70s. So, you know, I grew up in a time where you could ask a stewardess for a deck of cards and they would bring it to you and you would be able to play cards on your
a deck of cards and a pack of smokes.
And they were free. I remember the last couple rows of the airplane was the smoke. Fucking forgot about that. But I remember the last couple rows of the plane was the smoking section. I remember when I was a kid, my mom used to ask if I could get a little pin of the airline and I could get that. Now you don't get that anything. You get nothing.
No.
You're lucky. So I will say on Cathay Pacific, peanuts. They gave us peanuts.
Wow. That's like verboten in most areas now.
I looked around hoping to see somebody's face swell up so I could go over and eat my second pack of peanuts, but it wasn't happening. But yeah, let's be brutally honest. 16-hour flight, absolutely hellish. Almost as hellish as being in Morgantown, West Virginia. But who knows? I mean, there are several levels of hell out there. Ron, let me ask you.
Yes.
I have not asked you this question. This is in more than 2 weeks. So I'm going to ask you this right now.
Yes.
What's bothering you?
You know what's bothering me, Brian? I'm going to tell you what's bothering me. The state of New Jersey, Brian, is bothering me. And I've had gripes with the state of New Jersey previously and again this week. You want to know what my problem is with the state of New Jersey, Brian? Is that for whatever reason, New Jersey cannot seem to keep its tectonic plates in line. And for that, great cities like Philadelphia and New York City have to bear the brunt of an earthquake caused within New Jersey. It's unacceptable. And I think the Garden State needs to get its act together.
That's, but now do you think New Jersey has any role to play in controlling whether the earthquake takes place or not?
I mean, it happened on your watch, Brian, in New Jersey, as you sat, you know, on your your waterfront estate, watching people fall into the Hudson from the shaking. I don't believe you rescued any of them.
Nope.
Shameful, nonetheless. But yeah,
you can't swim. Not my fault.
I think New Jersey needs to own up to its shortcomings.
Now, Johanna
put it perfectly. What? It's a bunch of nasty gas releasing swampland.
Now, why would she be complimenting New Jersey right now? Like, that was actually based on like the reality of New Jersey. I mean, that's a compliment. But all right, let's be brutally honest here. So there was an earthquake this week, and that's your beef of the week. But how did it? Okay, how was your life upended because of this earthquake? Like,
look, I am stuck underground at the moment, Brian, because of this. I mean, I thought we discussed this prior to the show.
But is that not the fact of your faulty 17th century colonial suburban home that you chose to purchase with Mrs. Ron? Like, is the fact that you built a house that could not stand the nearby tectonic plates shifting? You buy an aluminum shack that's held together by caulk and stucco, and then somehow expect it to last forever. You cannot blame New Jersey for that. That's unreasonable.
First of all, my house was built by the founding fathers, the people who built this country, and not all of us can afford brand new construction, you know, on a coastline, on a river line, six floor views, flooring, laundry rooms, this kind of stuff. Not all of us. Some of us, you know, we
basketball treasure, court. Don't forget my
we
own
treasure. Own. Old things that have been around for generations. But now, listen, I'm down here. I'm in my bunker. It is what it is. Did not have the worst earthquake experience. I think we have to go to another Pennsylvania man, Brian, and that is Justin Allen of Horsham, who in a ironically timed twist was in the middle getting a vasectomy when the earthquake Ooh. Hit. He was apparently forced the surgeon to set down his scalpel for a moment. As the guy wondered whether, quote, a train was passing. The doctor was like, I think this is an earthquake. I figured he was messing with me, but he had to stop because everything was shaking.
You had a vasectomy a couple years ago, Ron. You said to me that you had it. You told me that you went to Taiwan during typhoon season, and your doctor had to put his scalpel down, their scalpel. I do not want to assume gender, but you told me that I believe it was Typhoon Ivanka was going through Thailand at the time while you were having your vasectomy. And you said that you had absolutely no side effects to it other than obviously the leakage from the poorly sewn wound that kept coming out of your scrotum. Can you imagine having a vasectomy? And first off, I mean, the guy, no offense, the guy was out.
They used a local anesthetic and he was awake for the process.
I had general anesthesia in like 1997 or no. It was probably 99 when I had mine. But Jesus Christ, I had general. I remember being shaved by a large Indian man. Not a joke. That is not an exaggeration.
He was a
large Indian man. But so you're telling me that he had local anesthesia and an earthquake happens while they're slicing up his balls. Wow. That's scary.
But apparently everything went smoothly and he was recovering at home the next day.
Okay. God bless him. If I were him, I would test multiple times to ensure that there's no sperm in his ejaculate.
Brian, where were you during the great earthquake of 2024?
I was sitting at my desk at work, minding my business, doing work. And then I cannot remember whether I was in the middle of a enthralling email or whether I was in the middle of a invigorating Excel worksheet. But I just remember the ground just kind of going, and it sounded, it made me actually think, it felt like one of the upstairs neighbor on the floor above us was moving heavy equipment. That's all. That's what it sounded like. Right. I had a friend who lived in upstate New York reach out to say, hey, did you just feel something? And I was like, yeah, I felt the earth. I felt the ground move. And she was like, I felt the ground move also. And next thing I knew, you know, a whole bunch of people started chiming in to ask, you know, if other people had done it. Let me ask you a question, Ron. I'm going to ask you.
Sure.
Obviously, you have been affected. You are in your earthquake underground, undisclosed location due to the fact of the Secret Service not being comfortable with the stability of your home. But what is general etiquette, you know, post-earthquake in terms of, you know, reaching out to strangers or people you know to see if they're okay? Because I had a friend who mm-hmm. I had been speaking to who reached out to me and stated a disappointment that they had with me for not inquiring as to their safety.
If you have close friends, family, loved ones that were in, you know, the radius of the epicenter, I think just a quick text just saying, hey, just checking in, making sure you're okay. I think it's appreciated. I mean, is it a requirement? Maybe not, but is it appreciated? I would say so.
Because I had a friend, close friend, I would say, dear friend, you know.
Sure.
I don't want to make things uncomfortable. I would say a very dear friend who lives in, how would I describe this? Northeast suburban Philadelphia. You know, they're not even in Philadelphia. They're on the outskirts.
No.
They actually reached out to me to vocalize disappointment that I had not reached out to ascertain the safety of them and their missus. And I was very surprised that, you know, they perceived that that it was socially expected of me to say, hey, you're nowhere near this small earthquake, but I just want to make sure you're okay. And it just felt, I felt like I was being called out, but I didn't feel like I had done anything wrong. What do you think? What is etiquette at that point?
You know, it's so rare that we deal with earthquakes that maybe there isn't set etiquette. Maybe that's just something, you know, you go with what's inside your heart as to what is right and what is wrong.
And what if there's nothing but just black coal inside of your heart?
I think that's maybe just something other people need to remember at times and lower their expectations of you.
Ooh, it really hurt. Really, really. Really hurt. I was blowing the belt, Ron. Yeah.
Let's get to our stories of the week. It's been, there's been a ton of stories that we have not mm-hmm. been able to touch because you were gone. An entire bridge fell, Ryan, in the state of Maryland. Just not even on our radar at this point because of how long ago it was. So we have stories this week that we would like to make sure don't get missed like that. Brian, what is your story of the week this week?
Every now and then you get a trifecta where it hits three major zeitgeist topics that just kind of captures the essence of America. My story this week involves a gentleman by the name of Peter Owens. Ron, do you have a photo of Mr. Peter Owens?
Hold on. Matt, put up the Owens photo.
Peter Owens. Listen, clean cut gentleman appears to have, you know, a slight case of male pattern baldness, but that doesn't make him a bad person. I mean, we're all rooting for him. Peter Owens, Florida man.
Florida.
Okay, so he checks off the Florida man. The Florida man, Peter Owens, 35, was arrested this past week after he allegedly assaulted a Walgreens store manager with a Bible on Easter Sunday. That's right, Ron. Peter Owens was arrested and charged with felony battery after an incident that unfolded at a Walgreens store in Clearwater Beach on March 31st. Apparently, Owens entered the Walgreens store at 11:30. Now, if you're going into a Walgreens at 11:30 on a Sunday night, I mean, there's only a couple things you should be buying. Condoms, Plan Bs, and I'm going to say Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Unfortunately, Owens was not there in that Walgreens store to purchase one of those three. I like to refer to them as the Holy Trinity. Sure. He went in there to purchase a pair of headphones until he apparently got into a verbal altercation with a store employee over the merchandise. I'd love to know. Unfortunately, the story here does not state exactly how you get from, hey, I think I need some headphones, I wonder if these are any good, to actually getting into an argument with an employee. The argument escalated after an employee felt the need to get the store manager, at which point Mr. Owens then allegedly smacked the store manager in her face with the Bible after she asked him to leave the store. So listen, we love a God-fearing individual who uses their Bible to physically assault retail employees. I mean, nothing says I love God like beating somebody up who's working at a Walgreens at 11:30 at night. Those people have been through enough. They need our support. You should be in there saying, thank you for working right now. I appreciate the fact that you have made my life a little bit easier. Unfortunately, Mr. Owens did not take that approach. He was arrested, brought to Pinellas County Jail. Next day, posted $5,000 bond. We'll see where it goes from this. But hitting a retail employee with the Bible does not make you, a lover of God. Let's just be honest.
It seems a bit excessive.
It's just bad form, Ron. Bad form. Just my kid. Ron, what's your story of the week?
So my story, Brian, have you watched The Three Body Problem on Netflix yet?
No.
All right. Well, number one, put it on your list. It's very good so far. Six.
What is it, The Three Body Problem?
Three Body Problem. So this is Lin Chi from Hong Kong. He is...
oh, my God. I think I bumped into him on my trip. Whoa.
He was a billionaire fan of The Three Body Problem, which was a Chinese sci-fi novel. He really wanted to bring this novel to TV. He had made a lot of cash in 2014 after his gaming company went public, became a billionaire, managed to in 2020 get a contract with Netflix to get this the series put up and on the air. Unfortunately, he would not live to see it as he was poisoned and killed at age 39. The culprit was one of Lin's own executives, a high-flying lawyer who helped Lin's Yuzu Games secure the rights to adapt the highly acclaimed trilogy. After a falling out with his boss, Zhu Yao gifted Lin a bottle of what he said were probiotic pills, but which contained a cocktail of lethal toxins that he bought off of the dark web. He killed the guy. He went to trial. He was sentenced to death for murder by a court in Shanghai on March 22nd, the day after the much anticipated debut of Three Body Problem on Netflix.
Wow. Well, so, I guess that's the last time I take a bottle of probiotics from you. I mean, I know every time I go there, you tell me that I have to do the work. You tell me I need to buy a bottle of colloidal bronze off of you. And then you tell me that I need to buy a 3-month supply of probiotic pills off of you. And now I know I can't do that anymore.
Yes. At least 5 toxins were detected in Lynn's body, including mercury and tetrodotoxin, an extremely potent poison found in pufferfish. In addition, he also poisoned beverages in the offices of 2 executives that he had disputes with, causing 4 colleagues to fall sick. However, all four of them survived.
Question. So the photo you have up, is he the guy that was charged with murder, or is he the guy who died?
He was the guy that was murdered. I was not able to find a photo of the murderer himself. So but this was the gentleman, Mr. Chi, that was poisoned and killed.
What's the story of Three Body Problem?
So without ruining the story too much, it basically is about aliens. We make contact with aliens. Someone makes contact with aliens from the planet Earth, and the aliens are now on their way to Earth to, in essence, conquer the planet and remove us, you know, so they can take over the planet, because they have a very unstable solar system that they live in because of the three-body problem, right? Which, you were a physics buff in college. I'm sure you're well aware of the three-body problem.
I am completely unaware of physics. I almost failed. It was one of the few classes in school I almost failed. What is the three-body problem?
So the three-body problem, and I'm sure I'm not getting this completely right, but in physics, if you want to see how two bodies will interact with each other, there apparently is a finite number of ways that, you know, two planets or a sun and a planet or what have you can interact with each other. Once you add a third body to that equation, there becomes an infinite number of ways that these bodies can react. And you can never get a stable ecosystem because of it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. A little education for you.
Certainly it doesn't sound like a subject matter that is worth killing over. Allegedly? Do I need to say allegedly, or is he found guilty
now? No, because he's been guilty and sentenced to death. So I think I think you're okay.
Is now the right time to say, what are you watching?
I mean, if you want to talk about what you're watching, I mean, now would be as good a time as any, because I, you know, obviously I'm watching Three Body Problem, but please, you tell me what you're watching.
I've been doing a lot of catching up, but first off, I watched the new Dave Attell special on Netflix. I believe it's called Hot Cross Buns. Watched that, very short. Probably about 35 minutes. Not sure. You know, you've got a guy like Attell who could probably go up there and do 90 minutes of comedy that's never been heard. The man does not put out specials. He does not subscribe to the approach a lot of the younger comics do, which is, you know, put out a special every year, every other year, just keep pumping out the product for social media. You know, but for somebody considering how much of a, you know, a classic joke writer he is, you would have thought that he would have, you know, been able to put out a full hour. Highly entertaining. Also, Tom Segura, I don't know if you've watched his specials, but he's become very popular. I think the last time he came around, he did Prudential Center. I mean, he's at the arena level. He does the podcast with Kreischer. The special I watched was Ledgehammer. Highly entertaining. There's something about delivery that really resonated with me. I did enjoy Sledgehammer. I tried watching Cheeseburger, the one with Andrew Santino's special. As you can see, I've watched a lot of found it unwatchable. Turned it off after 10 minutes, was not connecting with me. I also fear, and I mean, I'm just being upfront and honest, I also fear that I have a my personal issue of connecting with people that are significantly younger than me. I have a hard time taking them seriously when they start talking about their life problems, and you realize you're 28, you have no life problems by comparison to reality. You're still in la la land. I did finish The Octopus Murders. You know, you turned
me on. I like it.
Very interesting. Just freaky. You want to reach a point where you sit there and say that this is just a paranoid person who is, just looking for a conspiracy out there. But it's too believable to not be true. But I really enjoyed it. It was a 4-episode docuseries. If you like a good conspiracy theory, especially dating back to the Ronald Reagan age, that's for you, William. And then earlier today, I watched, there's a documentary on Hulu called Freaknik, The Wildest Party Never Told, which is about a spring break tradition that started in the early 90s in Atlanta, where African-American youth, instead of going to the Florida, Fort Lauderdale or Miami, this was before Miami, they chose to spend their spring break in Atlanta and the wild times that resulted in it. You know, I love a good early 90s, just African-American kids, you know, showing a lot of skin, being sexually provocative. That is my shit.
That's in your wheelhouse.
Of course. Absolutely. Listen, when there is a girl with back wearing booty shorts, it's just, she's going to dominate me. We know that. And that's my thing.
That's we don't kink shame around here. That's what we don't do.
Ron, what are you watching?
In addition to Three Body Problem, also watched a documentary on Netflix called The Anti-Social Network, kind of digging into the origins of 2chan, which then started 4chan, which then started 8chan.
That's what that's about.
And Q. Yeah, it is. But we watched the documentary on Q previously, and like the one kid with the developmental disease that's in the wheelchair that started 8chan that was in the queue.
Yes.
He's in this too. And like a lot of people that have been in other kind of social network conspiracy theory documentaries are in this. I don't think you will learn a lot new. Like, I think everything that's kind of addressed in The Anti-Social Network, the big takeaway is, people should get off of social media and go outside. Well, all right. Yeah, no shit. Like, lying on the internet is bad and causes, January 6th and Q and everything else. But there really wasn't anything new there. So it was a little boring. And then there's a new series on Netflix called Files of the Unexplained. So it's about like hauntings and alien invasions and things like that. And I watched the first one, which was about an alien abduction. It was the Pascagoula alien abduction someplace in Mississippi. And I guess the one thing I will say is that it was a 35-minute episode, and I watched it as long as I could and paused it to turn it off, and there were still 10 minutes left. And I was like, they had already repeated so much in that first 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just very boring. So I may try a second episode just to see if it gets any better, but this point, can't recommend it.
Okay.
And watch a lot of basketball, Brian. We had the women's final today. South Carolina beating Iowa. Watched the semifinal, Iowa against UConn. Great game. Caitlin Clark, great player. Smart player. She was up, by a point or two at the end of the game. Threw the ball out of bounds to keep UConn from getting it so they could win the game. I understand some people were upset because the line was 2.5 on that game, but she was going for the win, Brian, and you have to respect that.
Listen, I I have a problem when sports fans refer to white athletes as smart and intelligent, while I've also heard you refer to African American athletes as gritty and using their body. I don't appreciate the double standard.
I think where your problem is coming from is, if I remember, you had sent out an internal memo asking that we never refer to any women as smart or intelligent on the podcast. And I think that's really what the challenge is. But regardless, but speaking of Iowa, Ryan.
Yes.
Now, can we talk about this stolen identity story from someone who, as it turns out, was a University of Iowa hospital employee? Like, this is one of those stories, not this guy, I don't know why I put that up there. This is one of those stories that you read and it's horrible because somebody had their identity stolen. But then when you read what happened to the individual that had their identity stolen, it gets even worse. Let me pull up the mugshot of the guy that stole this person's identity. So this... I hate so many pop-ups on news pages, Brian, and I'm just not.
Is that
I'm not a fan?
Is that Senator Fetterman?
It looks like it's John Fetterman, but it's actually Matthew David Kearns, age 58. He pled guilty last week to federal charges that he had been living under another man's identity since 1988. He worked in the University of Iowa Hospital's IT department from 2013 to 2023, but he apparently worked at the hospital under the name William Donald Woods, an alias he started using back in 1988 when he worked with the real William Woods at a hot dog cart in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He used Woods' identity in every aspect of his life, including obtaining employment, insurance, official documents, even paying taxes under that name. Even more tragic is he managed to get a copy of Woods' birth certificate from the state of Kentucky using information he found about Woods found on Ancestry.com. So in 2019, the real William Woods was homeless. He was living in L.A. He went to a branch of a national bank and explained that he recently discovered somebody was using his credit and had accumulated a lot of debt. He was trying to find out information about the account numbers. And so Woods gave the bank employee his real Social Security card and a California ID, which matched the information the bank had on file. But he wasn't able to answer any of the security questions because this other guy, Kearns, had opened the accounts. So the bank employee called Kearns, whose phone number was attached to the accounts. He answered the security questions correctly, said no one in California should have access to the accounts. So the bank calls LAPD. The officers speak with Woods. They speak with this guy, Kearns. Kearns faxes the LA police a copy of Woods' Social Security card and birth certificate, as well as a Wisconsin driver's license that Kearns had acquired in Woods' names. And so when Woods got all upset over this, he gets arrested and charged with identity theft and false impersonation. And because throughout the judicial process, he keeps insisting that he was William Woods, in February 2020, a judge rules that he was not mentally competent to stand trial, and he was sent to a medical hospital in California where he received psychotropic medication and other mental health treatment. He ends up pleading no contest in 2021, and he was sentenced to 2 years imprisonment in order to pay $400 in fines. Thankfully, now that this gentleman has been arrested and pled guilty, because his big issue, shockingly, the issue wasn't the fact that he stole this guy's identity, but he borrowed money from a bank in someone else's identity. So that's what he is going to prison for 30 years over. Poor guy that he stole the identity from, not only is he dealing with being homeless, but then he tries to prove he is who he says he is, and he gets thrown into a mental hospital.
Hold on. So he was homeless, and then suddenly he now has a home.
I mean, I guess you can look at it that way.
Yeah. I mean, You're telling me roof over his head, three square meals a day. A working bathroom. I'm assuming the showers with like shampoo and soap.
I would imagine, yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm going to go out on a limb here, Ron. You may not agree with me. Just give me a little leash and let's see where I go with this.
But you're telling me he went
from being completely homeless, living on the street, eating out of garbage cans.
No, he ate garbage cans. He ate the actual metal garbage can.
And then he goes to like being able to...
Three hots in a cot, which I believe was your nickname in college.
I saw a movie once called Three Hots in a Cot. I'm saying that it's not necessarily as tragic as, say, like you were to, you know, be wrapped up in that system and be forced to live in a mental hospital.
And he's getting psychotropic medications, too. I mean, he is
tripping
every single day.
Tripping balls. I'm just saying that, like, you know, it's not good what happened to him, but, sure, you know, sure, it could be a lot worse.
All right. Brian, we get to visit a segment that we haven't had a chance to do in a while. One of our more popular ones whenever we do get to do it. It's time for Fuck Around and Find Out, Brian. And not surprisingly, we once again get to deal with someone from Florida. This is Brent George, Brian. He is a Florida man who was at a Disney World restaurant. He allegedly approached a table of four at Bellevue Lounge inside Disney's Boardwalk Inn, where he allegedly started to taunt a girl with Down syndrome. The woman's mother allegedly confronted George, demanded to know if he was making fun of her daughter. He allegedly shoved the woman twice before slapping the woman's daughter-in-law in the face when she tried to calm the escalation. He then allegedly punched the woman's husband in the neck, who returned a jab to his face. A bystander intervened and wrapped George in a bear hug in an effort to remove him from the restaurant. George told police he was, quote, struck by a glass cup during the fight, also had several cuts on his face. After questioning everybody present, he wanted to press charges against the group of four, but declined to provide police a statement. However, the other four did provide statements, so he was arrested and charged with four counts of battery. He was taken to Orange County Jail, where he spent the night. His wife paid his $4,000 bond the next day.
What that story lacks is what was the buildup to the reason why he would be interacting with that other family with the Down syndrome?
Apparently, this may shock you, Brian. The word is he had been drinking excessively.
Oh, my gosh. I thought it was because the person with Down syndrome was making grilled cheeses and he wanted one.
I don't have any confirmation on that. Sorry.
Was it Uncle Danny?
It was. Where'd you get that cheese, Danny? I don't believe it was. Can we talk about? And this has been burning through my soul all week, Brian.
Can we talk about
the Norwegian cruise line passengers
that for some reason were on so many
fucking national news channels this week? It boggled my mind. I think I saw this on the Today Show first. Sure. Then I saw it on NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt. If you were not aware of the story, there were some U.S. passengers. They were on a cruise over in Africa. They were at one of the ports and they went on a private tour. Their tour ran late. They got back late and the ship left them behind. And then this whole story about, oh, they had to race through seven different countries to catch up with the ship. Well, I mean, you're in Africa. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of countries there. Like everything you cross go through as a country. It's not sure. Like, you know, like saying I had to go across seven states. Well, if you're in the United sure. States, yeah, you'd have to do that. But what I don't understand, number one, I don't understand how this gets to the level of national news. Like the two primary people that they talked to were Jill and Jay Campbell, married couple that were on this tour. And it was a 20-day voyage on Norwegian Cruise Lines. Who do they know that gets them on national news? Because how many times...
Ron, time out, Ron. All right, all right. Not everybody is as familiar with this story as you are. Can you all please right. rewind and, you know, let us know, bring us up to speed so we have the same information you do. Deep breaths. And I also believe that you do, you have an obligation to our listeners right now to let them know whether you are a shareholder in Norwegian Cruise Lines.
I am a previous shareholder in Norwegian Cruise Lines. I no longer am. It's just going through a battery.
Wait a second. Stop right now. Stop right now, you bastard. What? You sold your Norwegian stock?
I told you that when I liquidated all my stocks the other 2 years ago.
You never told me you liquidated all your stocks. I still have fucking Disney stock that you told me to buy.
Oh, yeah.
You sold Norwegian?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, nice little profit on that.
Are you fucking insane? I bought that at like 35 and it's barely crushed 20. How the fuck? Why would you sell and not tell me to?
I told you. I said I'm closing.
You
I'm
never told me you were going to sell.
Now we've gotten on a tangent. Janelle needs to know the story, Brian. So can you put your petty little issue off to the side?
You fucked me so hard on these stocks. You fucked me so hard on these stocks. Keep going.
Harder than Liverpool fucked you earlier today.
No. I fucked me with. That was me. That was not Liverpool.
Anyway. The initial story was about eight Norwegian cruise passengers, including a pregnant woman and an elderly man with a heart condition. They claimed that they have been stranded on an African island without money and vital medications after the vessel left port without them. They were apparently stuck on the Central African island of Sao Tome after the captain of the ship allegedly refused to let them reboard. But at the end of the day, these folks were on their own with a private tour and they missed the all aboard time. And so they weren't able to board and the ship left without them. And then they had to figure out a way for them to get to Senegal, which was the next port of call for the ship so that they can, that they could reboard the ship. And, you know, Norwegian Cruise Lines even said guests are responsible for ensuring that they return to the ship at the published time, which is communicated over the intercom in all of their daily communications, and it's posted when they exit the vessel. So these folks, admit, well, yeah, our tour ran late, but you know, our tour captain said he called and spoke to the captain of the ship. But number one, I don't believe. But two, even so, again, How many people are on a cruise ship? Hundreds, thousands?
Yeah.
And these eight people feel that they should have waited, you know, I don't know. It reeks of entitlement to me, Brian.
Okay. I had this whole argument that you're just being a company man, but now I realize you don't even own any stock. I have 30 shares in that piece of shit that you told me to buy 4 years ago, and I'm still holding. Every time you're like, "Oh, Diamond Hands." You don't have Diamond Hands. Hands.
If you don't listen when I communicate to you, you don't speak my love language, Brian, is what it comes down to. When I have a conversation with you and say I'm selling off my stock so I can take the capital loss on my taxes.
You never said that you were selling. You never told me you were selling.
Could this be the end of the podcast? Is this the straw that breaks the proverbial camel's back?
No, I love you. I love you way too much. I could never let you go.
So then shut your hole.
Have you not figured out that like I'm an emotional doormat and like you could literally do anything and I would still
I mean, I think just this level of abuse, I'm guessing you're probably fully erect right now.
At this age, 51 and a half, takes a lot more than
so
that.
Much.
It's a lot so much. More than that. Yeah.
But I mean, what's your take on it, Brian? Again, do you understand how this got to be national news?
I'm going to be brutally honest here. It's just like if I were on a cruise, I would be so anxious about the time that you have to be back to not miss the boat, that I don't know that I would be able to relax on any of these excursions. Like I would be checking my watch every 5 minutes, just obsessed over that time. And some dude in Senegal being like, "That's okay. I spoke to your captain. It is all okay." I would not be all right with that.
Was that a Senegalese accent you just did right there?
Jesus, well done with the Senegalese. That was my attempt at it. I know they speak a bastardized version of the King's English. But yeah, you know, if the boat says, "Hey, we're leaving at 7 and you show up at 8 o'clock, you're fucked. Like, you know, it's one thing to be 5 minutes late, but you can't show up an hour late. You just can't.
Yeah. Listen, I was coming back from a business trip the other week, and, you're not able to check a bag. You can check a bag up to 45 minutes prior to your departure time. And we had some transportation issues. So I literally got to the airport 45 minutes before my flight and was not able to check my bag. But you know whose responsibility it was, Brian, at the end of the day?
Yours.
It was mine. It was mine.
Yeah.
I didn't call Lester Holt. I didn't call Hoda Kotb. I didn't call Savannah Guthrie. I didn't call Mario Lopez on Access Hollywood.
So what happens in that instance?
Thankfully, there was someone who had ended up driving us to the airport who was leaving the next day, and he volunteered to bring my suitcase back with him. Otherwise, I would have had to be rebooked on another flight, which there really wasn't any because it was, you know, Easter weekend.
Oh, so they'll sit there, so they won't even bring it on board on the plane. They just say you can't get on the plane.
You can get on the plane, but your bag can't get through security because it's not a carry-on.
So what do you do? So can you send it on a later plane?
No, they said like we'd have to change your flight because we can't just give your luggage a flight.
Wow.
That, I guess, makes sense. I know.
It does in a way.
Lesson learned.
Listen, this is the post 9/11 world we live in. You know, it's been over 20 years, transportation is not, you know, what it used to be. You know, I got on a plane, I got on a train not that long ago in Yangshuo, China, taking a high speed rail train, which approached 200 miles per hour. But I got on this, I was getting on this train from Yangshuo to Shenzhen. And little did I know that I was not supposed to be bringing a water bottle in my carry-on bag.
Really?
Lady made me drink the water at security before letting me through, so that she could ascertain that it wasn't an explosive. She actually stopped me, told me I needed to drink from it. And keep in mind, her English, poor. My Cantonese, worse.
Poor.
My Mandarin, just literally non-existent. But between the two of us, we were able to communicate that I was going to be drinking out of that water bottle if I planned on getting through. I took a very healthy swig, and had she not told me to stop, I would have just kept fucking drinking it. Because I'm going to tell you something. When you're in mainland China and a security official tells you to drink out of your water bottle, you keep drinking. Because you have no interest in going to a Chinese labor prison. So I drank that water.
At any point were you confused and felt that you needed to splash some of the water from your bottle on her face?
No, not at all. I wanted to just make sure I drank as much. Though I will say this, I did get a kick. And I know we're approaching an hour. We still have a bunch of stuff to get to. So do not want to. I did get a kick out of the local Chinese, especially when I was not in in Hong Kong, just openly staring at me because I was a white man walking into a restaurant or wherever I was going. Literally watched people put down their chopsticks at a restaurant to just openly stare at me and follow me as I walk through the room to sit down. Wild, wild experience. It was, you know, you hear these stories about black people going down, you know, into these small towns in Alabama and talking about how uncomfortable they were, you know, being the minority and the, feeling uncomfortable being surrounded by white people. I did not feel that, in these small, in Guilin, China, where people stared.
Now, I had heard through certain channels that they stared because they looked at like your gray hair and they felt that you were 90, 100 years old. Is that factual?
That's hurtful. That's hurtful, Ron. It's very hurtful.
Brian, we have something else that's going to try and kill us soon.
Hold on. Speaking of hurtful, here comes Allie jumping in. Talking about I had a booger hanging out of my nose.
Come on.
You're better, Allie. Allie, you're better than that. You're better than making booger jokes.
Johanna's saying that your top button was closed and it was 85 degrees with 100% humidity. That probably.
If that wasn't so accurate, because it was in like the 80s and it was a insane level of humidity. There were a couple of days I went through three shirts during the course of the day and I was always buttoned up to that. Oh, I wish Joe didn't know me that well. God damn it. She nailed me on that one. That was actually very accurate. Well done, Joe. Well done. Well done.
So Brian, there is a potential bird flu pandemic, which could be quote 100 times worse than COVID. It may be on the horizon after a rare human case was discovered in Texas. The H5N1 avian flu has spread rapidly since the new strain was detected in 2020, affecting wild birds in every state. But now, Brian, it has leapt over to mammals with cattle herds across four states becoming infected. And on Monday, federal health officials announced that a dairy worker in Texas caught the virus. This has apparently been on the top of the pandemic list for many years. And now that we are starting to see it cross the barrier from bird to mammal to human, this could potentially be the next big pandemic, which, listen, I've been kind of bored since the last pandemic ended. I'm kind of excited about this.
Are you shitting me?
Yes, I am. But this is a scary note, Brian, is around 52% of humans who have contracted H5N1 since 2003 have died. In comparison, COVID right now kills less than 0.1% of those that infected, but its highest fatality rate was around 20%. So this bird flu right now, again, it hasn't reached the masses to really see how it impacts people on a large scale, but has the potential to be up to 2.5 times more deadly than COVID was.
Jesus, that's pretty scary.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we shouldn't be fucking around with this stuff.
Are you fucking around with bird flu? When did this happen?
Listen, I had the opportunity to go to Wuhan and I chose not to.
Wise choice. Brian, we are getting close to the end of the episode. You know what else we haven't done in a couple of weeks, Brian? We have not done our After Dark, which, as many of you know, is exclusive content for our Patreon subscribers. We do it at 9:30, so about 26 minutes from now, we will be jumping on the After Dark. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, it's really something you should do for yourself. It's a lot of people talk about self-care. I think the best way of self-care for individuals is to subscribe to our Patreon. You do it at the $10 level or higher. Not only do you get some great swag, but you get live access to After Dark every Sunday at 9:30. And then every final Sunday of the month, We have our pajama party where all of our Patreon subscribers come on. We just have a good time. It's just fun. It's laughs.
Yeah.
Have a few drinks.
Fun times.
Have a few chuckles.
Yeah. But it's also a place where we can kind of like, you know, loosen our neckline and get a little comfortable. Right. I mean, it's behind the paywall. Like, that's the important thing, is the fact that, you know, like, we do this podcast. It's 1 hour. It's free. It's for the masses. It's for everyone. You know, it's for the grandmothers. It's for the children. You know, everybody should be able to watch this podcast for free and enjoy it. But After Dark is a special beast. It's behind the paywall. It's stuff that, you know, you don't want YouTube to know about. It's stuff that I'm not comfortable with the people over at Meta and Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp, you know, dealing with.
This time's gotta stop.
Sorry, it's been a couple weeks.
You know, so
on that.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. But I do like a fuck your story.
fuck your story.
God, I love that. But yeah, no, it's a place where, you know, we do the kind of stories that, you know, the you know, that are not necessarily appropriate for the masses. It's a little place where Ron and I get a little bit more comfortable than we are during the podcast. And you're all welcome. But we put it, you know, we put it behind the paywall because that is where people, you know, who are true lovers of the show, people who want to assist in offsetting some of the, you know, this show is not free, people. You know, no. There are, you know, to be able to pay for these streaming costs, to be able to pay for the podcast hosting. I mean, there are costs associated to it. And we've been reached out to consistently from people saying, hey, listen, how can we help out? That's how you can.
There you go.
Sign up for our Patreon, RonAndBrianPodcast.com. Ron, it would be great if you were running the banner on the bottom, but I do not. I know that
we
outside,
ran out of money. We ran out of money because we don't have enough Patreon subscribers.
That's a shame. RonAndBrianPodcast.com, upper right hand corner, become a patron. You know, support the show. As little as $5 a month gets you access to, you know, just exclusive. And then obviously at other tiers you can sign up for really delivers. You know, you get some, you know, live streaming, you get video, you get, if I'm not correct, you get videos of me doing my prep for my colonoscopy recently. You know, Ron, maybe we're going to talk about what's my poop consistency over the past couple of weeks. That is definitely a story. A lot of blood. A lot of blood has been coming out recently, but we're going to talk
also,
about it.
You know, we also let people know at the platinum level, that's, I believe, $150 mm-hmm. per month. You do get access to the Ron and Brian emergency network, which, yep. You know, New York kind of got slammed because they sent out texts like 24 minutes after the earthquake.
Yep.
Our responsiveness was much quicker. We also forgot to mention, Brian, what tomorrow is. Tomorrow
the eclipse.
The total solar eclipse sponsored by the Ron and Brian podcast. Mm-hmm. So if mm-hmm. you when in the areas where you were getting 100% totality, look up at the eclipse and you will see the Ron and Brian logo. It was a bit of a spend, but we feel that the promotion is worth it.
I agree with you. It was very worth it.
Do you have any interest in seeing the eclipse?
No, I'm going to be at work and I could give a shit. I earlier today, somebody asked me if I wanted to buy eclipse glasses. And my first reaction was to say something insulting to the person. And then I realized, you know what? No, I just said to him, listen, man, I'm going to be stuck inside of an office. It would be lost on me. And then that was it. But I do not understand. I don't get it. I just don't get these obsessions with eclipses.
I feel like I've seen so many videos of eclipses at this point that it's just going to look like every other eclipse that I've seen on TV up to now.
Sure. It's just not that big of a deal at this point.
Maybe that's just me. Maybe I don't know how to enjoy things anymore, Brian. I don't know if it's my Wi-Fi that's bad or yours. you cut out a little bit. I think it's my Wi-Fi. It's the bunker Wi-Fi isn't great. I have to talk to the Secret Service about that.
It's not your fault. Don't worry about it. We're all good.
I think it's been a great first show back from your trip. We are 2 weeks away, Brian. 2 weeks from the 300th episode of the Ron and Brian podcast. Allie says we all.
What are we doing for it? What are we doing for it? I mean, I know that I put forth the idea of bringing back some poor children from out to the area outside of Hong Kong. I know I put forth the idea to you and Matt where I purchased some young children from there. And during episode 300, we interview our new housemates. You nixed it. You said that you did not think that that was appropriate. You said that that was, I believe the word you used was problematic. So I will not do episode 300 with my little Hong Kong friend. But I don't know. What are we doing for 300?
We'll need to do, Brian. We'll need to do the work. And we'll need to get ready for the 300th episode.
Yes, sir. I like it. I love it.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, everybody. We are going to close this episode. We are going to get ready for After Dark. We appreciate all of you joining us here on the Ron and Brian podcast. Patreon folks, we'll see you very shortly. Everybody else, we will see you next week.
Thank you for joining us on the Ron and Brian podcast. We're live each week on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. You can find prior episodes, links to our social media, and everything else Ron and Brian at ronandbrianpodcast.com. See you again next week.